Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio with your host, LiveParanormal.com owners, Rob Zarin and Nikki Farah Unnormal. Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio starts now.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio. My name is Nikki Paranormal, and I'm just one of the hosts this evening. I'm also joined by Rob Zarin. Rob, you there?
I am. You know what's funny is you missed something.
What? I didn't really miss anything. I changed.
No, I think you missed something. So
clever.
I think you might have missed this.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on.
Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio with your host, LiveParanormal.com owners, Rob Zarin and Nikki Farah Unnormal. Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio starts now.
There you go. There's the worst intro ever. It's better than it all starts. It all happens
don't
here.
Say it.
Oh, okay. That took me
like
an hour and 40
my
minutes.
Evening without it.
It took me an hour and 40 minutes. So you can tell I lack the skills, the skill set. And you know what was funny is I was like, all right, finally got it done. Wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was MP4, and they do not take MP4s. They only take MP3s. And I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yep.
Now I have to convert an MP4 to MP3, which, you know, that's like, I don't even know what a comparison would be, but like, just think like the worst comparison possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be like, me trying to convert a file.
That's like trying to learn and master a foreign language for others.
Yes, that's like,
in a matter of minutes.
Like me, you saying, hey, can you do tonight's show in Chinese? And I'd be like, yeah, I'll be on that. You know, that's my first file conversion ever. Period. That's the first time I ever converted a file.
Congrats.
Thank you. And it was all because you said you hated our intro at 7:45 tonight. And by 10 o'clock, I needed to produce something that was not going to say the magic words that you hate. So...
Mm-hmm.
You missed, and you know what the key was? It's like you missed it. So I was like, I just spent an hour and 45 minutes, and then you're like, started up the show without my new intro. And I was like, no, wait, you got to hear my new intro because it stinks, but it doesn't have those words you hate.
Okay.
So I think I need to get at least an A for effort and a D for quality.
Okay. That's fair.
Okay, good. One thing you can never say is that I didn't try.
You tried.
I did try.
Mm-hmm.
You gave me
that
nudge. It was my surprise. I'm not saying it was like a quality production. I'm just saying it was a surprise.
It was.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way it flowed with the live paranormal owners and cutting out all the parts you hated.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But as you can tell, we're still in the market for a new intro. that hasn't changed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's not. There's no going around that. But when it comes down to
right,
you know, time, I delivered, but delivered with a D quality thing. So
right,
but I'm excited. It was fun, and I'm looking forward to tonight's show. The past couple, I was gonna say weeks, but I think the past couple months, we've been focusing a lot on our genre and psychics and, you know, and this is the old thing about the paranormal. The paranormal is not just ghost hunting. I think sometimes it's misused, especially in our, no, it's
oh my
it
God.
Says it right here on my paper.
Oh my God.
My paper.
I had no idea.
Says what? Paranormal, all things unexplained, not just ghost hunting.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I find people in our genre misuse the term. Mm-hmm. That's strictly ghost hunting, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. So we have cryptozoologist Ken Gerhardt on tonight. And I always enjoy having him on. It's been quite some time. I can't remember the last time we had him on. I can make up a date, but it wouldn't even be right.
Right.
So we'll find out what's new with him. I know he's got a new book out. I'm probably going to read that, and I don't read many books, though I've been reading some ghost books lately, which they weren't that great, but it was at least some quality information. But I'm sure Ken's book is awesome because anything he writes is great. So I think we're going to bring him on. We're going to talk about his new book. We're going to talk about stuff that we haven't talked about in years and you know, see what he's been up to. So let's bring Ken on. Ken, how's it going?
Good evening, all.
How are you tonight? I'm doing
fantastic.
Pretty good. We had a bit of a fun evening at about 2 hours ago, and I call it our little pre-show conversation, and it usually consists of Nikki telling me, "Hey, don't say anything stupid tonight." Yeah, you know, that's pretty much what. If you could sum it up. So on top of the, hey, don't say anything stupid tonight, she decided to tell me, hey, you know, our intro that we've had for the past 5 years, I hate it. I hate it. I tell you every night, I hate it. It needs to be changed and changed now. You know, so I by no means am into doing audio files or anything that way. You know, and when someone hits you up like 2 hours previous to your show starting and said, hey, you need a new intro. You know, so you missed the new
or else, right?
Mm-hmm. Awful intro. Now, the one thing that is not awful about it was the words. She hated the words on the other one. And I would tell you what it was and kind of explain it to you, but then I don't want to start the interview off poorly. So we kind of, you know, changed it so you missed it. And so we're having a good night tonight. It was just kind of like a fly by the seat of your pants intro. But we're excited to have you on. And you know, it's been a while since we've talked cryptozoology, and I figured if we're going to talk about it, we might as well have Ken on. That's the, you know, the prime guy, in my opinion.
Well, I appreciate your kind words as always, Rob. It's good to, yeah, it's been a while, man, but it's definitely a good time to catch up, so I'm glad we were able to connect this time.
You know, and that's the best way to do it. We had Grant Wilson on from Ghost Hunters maybe like two or three weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks. And we haven't had him on in 5 years. So you know what the stuff to talk about was like tons. So you could talk about anything, like what's happened in the past 5 years. You know, so I think it's been at least 3 or 4 years since we've had you on. And I'm sure there's been a ton that's happened. So it kind of gives us a lot to talk about. And I know you got that new book.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what I've been working on in recent months is I have a new book out, The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. And I'm quite honored that I've been getting really positive feedback throughout the Bigfoot community. So You know, that definitely means a lot to me. And hopefully some new people will, you know, people that are kind of new to the subject matter will check it out as well, because it's kind of designed to be more of an introduction to the subject with the most accurate information that's been collected. And but, you know, there's some things in there for the kind of the old school Bigfoot people, some little nuggets that we were able to dig up. So, yeah, it seems to be going very well.
Well, as Nikki can attest to what I'm about to say, I don't know how it works. And you mentioned the Bigfoot community embracing the book. Now, in our genre, ghost hunting, that would be a feat to have the genre, you know, embrace anything. You know, I don't know how is the Bigfoot community. I'm kind of throwing you out there where you could probably throw some people under the bus or just, you know, say the tell-all book. But I know, like, in our genre, if you were to say, hey, the ghost hunting community embraced our book, you would really be talking about something significant. Is it the same way in the Bigfoot community?
Well, yeah, there's always been a lot of division in the Bigfoot community. You know, there are a lot of parallels to ghost hunting. But, I think the bottom line is you have a lot of very passionate people and, frankly, a lot of big egos, mine included. And so everyone's got a strong opinion and a way that they think things should be done. So, it's funny when people come up to me nowadays in the Bigfoot community and say, gosh, I wish we could just get rid of all the infighting and politics. And I say, you know, I always remind them it's always been this way. I mean, if you go back to the 1950s, when the name Bigfoot first made the news in 1958, some of the first Bigfoot investigators, the pioneers in my field, kind of got active in the 50s. Those guys were always fighting. I mean, I've heard some crazy stories in recent years. They pointed shotguns in each other's faces. They would cold cock each other at a McDonald's. I mean, it was just, you know, at times they were friends and kind of working towards a common cause. And at other times there was a lot of infighting stuff, but you know, it just goes back to think about what type of personality it takes to, you know, to try to seek evidence or to try to, you know, basically prove that a legend is real or to solve a timeless mystery, like, you know, ghosts, Bigfoot, UFOs, any of that stuff. You have to be a pretty passionate person, and you get a lot of kind of hard-headed people, you know, that kind of clash here and there. But that doesn't mean you can't have a consensus opinion. And I'm quite proud that so many, you know, Bigfooters are on board, because, you know, it's really about finding the common grounds. What are the things that we can all agree on, you know, that we're all kind of on the same page? And, you know, the other things, you know, we'll just kind of have to work out. But it's like a big family, you know. Families fight, too. So it's very similar.
True.
Well, and you all have, like, your one jerky cousin or, like, the sister you don't like or something, too. So, you know, it makes sense.
No doubt.
But the thing that, you know, kind of we'll just kind of talk about Bigfoot, because – obviously, that's where your book is about and what we're started with here. And I find interesting about Bigfoot, and I've watched many episodes of, you know, different television shows, ones you've been on. I went on a streak of watching Ancient Aliens due to the fact I had a broken phone. I couldn't change the channel. So I just went on for like 20 days straight, and it was like a marathon. So up until like whatever season played until 2015, I know every episode, you know. And what I find interesting in just bringing that in is how Bigfoot and similar beings are portrayed throughout time and in different areas. And, you know, it's something that I find interesting about it, and leads more kind of credibility to the whole idea of Bigfoot. Is, you know, obviously something's out there all in these different areas going back, you know, years, how many years that, there's got to be
centuries.
Something to it. Yeah, centuries.
Yeah.
It's got. It's just, and it's interesting, you know. And I'm up on some of the theories when it comes to the one that I guess I don't have the biggest grasp on was, you know, I think on one of the episodes they talked about Bigfoot being a pet of the aliens to you know, do their dirty work, and they used a underground cave system to, I guess.
Yeah, mining for gold and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some, Yeah, those are kind of extreme theories, you know. But, yeah, we don't know. I mean, it's everything's a mystery.
Right.
But, you know, you hit on kind of an interesting point. It's true that virtually every culture all over the world has a man-ape myth, you know, some type of Bigfoot Yeti-type creature, and those often date back centuries. Here in North America, of course, many Native American traditions refer to hairy, giant hairy savages in the wilderness, things like that. But the diametrically opposed argument, if you know, from the skeptical point of view, is that the reason that we don't, that we have these legends is not because Bigfoot exists, but rather because the concept of Bigfoot is so important to human beings in terms of our psychological and sociological perspective. You know, it kind of fills an important emotional void, this notion of a, I mean, because if you think about it, Bigfoot is essentially, it's like, it's a reflection of ourselves, our wilder selves, you know, the ancient humans that lived in the wilderness and that were more kind of beastly, and that we've kind of, it's a way for us to connect with that. But, you know, there's all kinds of theories, but there's a lot of evidence too. And beyond the legends and traditions, you have, of course, thousands of modern eyewitness reports. You have the footprint evidence. You have the Patterson-Gimlin film. So there's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of circumstantial evidence, but when you put it all together, it's essentially, it's a mountain high. So that's why I'm about 90% convinced that Bigfoot exists. And I always say that because I haven't yet seen one with my own eyes. So that's why I leave that 10% open.
Nice.
Well, and that's, you know, that's interesting. And I'm sure you get a lot of stories talking about different stories and research and stuff. And as do we with ghost hunting. And it's one of those things, like, as much as, like, you sometimes might, I always say inner eye roll, you know, you inner eye roll. Now there's some stories that I would say 100% inner eye roll, you know, that I've heard stories that are just ridiculous. But then really, well, who's saying what's ridiculous when it comes to our genres, because we don't know, you know, so you really can't discredit what somebody's saying unless I the story I always tell is I went into a ghost hunt and people said that the investigators prior to me danced with the ghost on stage. They were at a like an opera house for 30 minutes. And to me, I don't see how they would know they were dancing with the ghost. Who in the heck would dance with a ghost for 30 minutes? Hopefully they're not listening. But, you know, to me, that was like one that I always reference because I'm like 99.9% sure that that didn't happen. But, you know, it's like, you hear these things and people, I think, and it probably relates to your genre, is how really do you know? You know, so you get these stories, and as wild as they may be, that's a stupid story that'll be true. You know, so I'm sure you get that as well.
Well, yeah, you do. I mean, I always try to be respectful, and I've actually gotten accolades from a lot of colleagues because I'm very patient and very polite and respectful to anybody that wants to tell me, you know, about an experience or an account. But, you know, at least in what I do in cryptozoology, I try to follow a very scientific kind of methodology that utilizes a lot of critical thinking and objectivity and just looking at evidence and trying not to get emotionally biased or attached to one theory or another preference. So, another way to look at it would just be using common sense. So, for example, the more outrageous the story is, as you just kind of laid out there in your account, you know, if someone says that, you know, there's a family of Bigfoots came down from a UFO and they've made friends with them and they're riding, you know, braiding their horse's hair and, you know, all kinds of these far out things, it just seems less probable compared to the vast majority. And again, I was referencing the thousands of Bigfoot accounts, and if you look at the vast majority of those, they're actually pretty mundane. It's usually the Bigfoot crosses the road in front of a car at night, but the people get a good look at it. Or the Bigfoot is in the woods and the people see it and it walks off. Or it's drinking water, or it's, you know, digging rodents out of the ground and eating them. You know, something that you would expect from an animal. So, I mean,
right.
You know, if you eliminate a lot of the monstrous and kind of far-out qualities of Bigfoot, in my own opinion, it is an undiscovered hominin, a leftover archaic hominin from, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, perhaps, maybe millions, and, you know, it behaves in a very natural way. And when you get these really far out stories that, that involve Bigfoot, it's usually a very, very small percentage based, you know, compared to the vast majority. So, I mean, common sense would tell you, okay, if you have a model of evidence here that all fits in this nice pile here and it all kind of aligns, but then you've got these kind of oddball stories that don't make sense, then, you know, Sally, you just have to give them less, you know, say you disregard them out of hand, but, you know, they're certainly less probable and just not worth following up on most of the time.
Now, with your research, if I were to ask you, hey, I want to go find a Bigfoot, what, out of everywhere that you've gone, everywhere you've researched, where would you send somebody?
Well, ironically, I haven't been to the main place I've wanted to get to, which is probably like, and I've been close, but if you look at, you know, most people think of Northern California, of course. Washington State has been producing a lot of evidence over the years, both on the Pacific Coast, Olympic Peninsula, and also kind of the Blue Mountains in the east, Oregon. So that whole area is pretty active. But British Columbia, which is, you know, if you think about British Columbia, is a vast province there in Canada, and it's got, you know, very small population comparatively to the landmass, most of the people around Vancouver on the coast and in the south. But Sasquatch is, you know, as we know, is a Bigfoot, is a Sasquatch. Sasquatch has been talked about by the native people in British Columbia for centuries. And, you know, there's a provincial park there named after Sasquatch. There are so many sightings that came out of the area around the Fraser River, which is, you know, Harrison Hot Springs. And there's a ton of little villages, Yale and Ruby Creek, and that's kind of one of the Bigfoot Sasquatch meccas are some of those areas of British Columbia, which are just vast wilderness areas and have a pretty healthy tradition of Bigfoot. I have been close to there. I've been in the Garibaldi Range, which is north of Vancouver, and there, you know, a lot of activity. I think, say, anywhere up the British Columbia coast. But, you know, the other Bigfoot mecca, of course, is Bluff Creek, California, there in Northern California, Trinity National Forest, where the famous Patterson-Gimlin film was shot in 67. The name Bigfoot was born there in 1958. So that's kind of, you know, those are two pretty active areas, but, you know, you don't always have to go west. In recent years, we've been getting a lot of Bigfoot reports from Northern Kentucky. You know, southeast or southern Ohio in general has always been kind of an active area. We have a Four Corners area here in where Texas meets Louisiana, meets Arkansas, meets Oklahoma, where those four state corners diverge. There are a lot of reports and activity, and of course Florida. So there, you know, there's maybe five or six pretty promising areas around North America that you could go look.
Well, I know there's. I live in Ohio, and I know Ohio and Pennsylvania has an abundance of
Pennsylvania,
of
Ohio,
who,
and Kentucky.
And it's something that I have never been on. You know, and I wonder, like, I'm assuming, you know, when we do a ghost hunt and we have people who are kind of just enthusiasts, but they've never been on a ghost hunt. You know, they expect to see a ghost right away. You know, and I can imagine with Bigfoot, that's something that would take to go out. That's a lot of dedication. And I can respect that dedication because we go through it in what we do. You can't just run out there and be like, hey, look, there's Bigfoot. And then you take your picture and go home. You know, it's just like in ghost hunting. So on like a normal excursion, how long do you spend? I mean, I would guess like days. It wouldn't just be going out for a couple hours.
Well, yeah, it's days, but, you know, sadly, most of us that are full-time or serious Bigfoot investigators are self-funded. There are no scientific organizations or entrepreneurs or, you know, philanthropists or anyone like that. That there have been in the past, but not at the moment. So, you know, most of us have day jobs and other gigs going on. So we'll go out, you know, days. I don't know too many Bigfoot researchers. I know a couple Bigfoot researchers that go out for weeks and even months when they can, but it's tough to do. But, you know, you definitely want to be in an area for a longer period of time. One of the theories being, you know, there's an old adage in the field, which is you don't find Bigfoot, Bigfoot finds you. So I know a lot of researchers will go to an area that's very active, set up camp, It's usually pretty remote, and you just kind of acclimate yourself. And Bigfoot is allegedly a very curious creature, not as aggressive, I don't think, as people think, but certainly curious and intelligent. And so it's, you know, it's going to come, hopefully, find you. And once you kind of get all the animals get used to your smell and what you look like and stuff, you kind of blend into the scenery more after a period of time. So that's the theory, at least. But one of the things I write about in the book is that, you know, if you're an outdoorsman, I mean, Bigfooting is for you, because the very worst Bigfoot expedition is like a nice camping trip. So, I mean, you go out there, you enjoy the outdoors, you'll see lots of animals, you may not have some Bigfoot activity. Now, just to circle back around to something you said, though, unfortunately there is a lot of, and this may happen in the ghost hunting field too, but there are a lot of sort of overzealous wishful thinking and stuff. So, you know, people go, they, you know, take off work, they go out in the woods, they go out in the wilderness for a few days. There are, unfortunately, a lot of people that feel like they have to experience something, you know. So even if there's nothing going on, they have something that happened, you know. So, which, you know, it depends on where you're at, but typically nothing happens. I mean, it's kind of a rare occurrence, at least in my vast years of experience. So I've had some experiences, but they're not every weekend, you know, so.
Yeah, I think Nikki gets that all the time. She does more public events than I do. And, you know, there's people out there who want you to produce a ghost that minute.
On demand.
Yeah. It's more exciting. Oh, it's more exciting to go into a haunted place and have something happen than to go in and just say, oh, well, nothing happened all night. So it's just human nature to almost want to, you know, experience something.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when it comes for, you know, searching for Bigfoot, you know, you watch the television shows and, you know, I think the first thing, I don't know if I just caught on every single show I've ever put on, but they do the calls, you know, which how legitimate is that in a practice for searching for Bigfoot compared to them over embellishing it for television?
I mean, it's a technique, you know, different researchers and investigators pick and choose their own techniques. I don't do calls like Bigfoot type calls. That's nothing I've ever tried to do. I've heard calls, Bigfoot calls that I think were genuine, again, very rare, but once in a while, or vocalizations. But I always felt like you know, we don't know the language, so to speak, you know. So, I mean, if you're calling out to them, what is that doing? Is it making – in theory, people are trying to draw them closer, but they're going to answer back. But they may never get close to you if you're calling out all night. So, I'll do predator calls, like or not predator calls, you know, like I have, like, electronic predator things where I'll play other types of sounds that, you know, trying to invoke a response. And I do something called smell blasting, which other Bigfoot investigators do as well. Like late at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, start cooking up a bunch of bacon over a fire. And, you know, most animals are nocturnal, so you're probably going to get owls and other things that come poking around. But, you know, good smelling cooking food, you know, that's something that could potentially, hopefully draw in a Bigfoot or something. And,
cooking bacon,
so, you know,
I might show up. So watch out.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Smell of bacon rolling through the woods at 3 a.m. So
that's actually
accurate. We all have different techniques, you know.
Mm-hmm. Her and bacon. Right? We've gone to buffets before, and she's gotten just giant plates of bacon.
Yeah.
So
see,
loves bacon.
Bacon, you might end up getting Bigfoot. You might end up, you know, I might show up. You never know.
Yeah.
They actually have,
cool. Yeah, one last point on that is, you know, as I was kind of saying a minute ago about how they find you, the most interesting things and most of what I've experienced have been vocalizations or sounds that, to me, in my opinion at least, could have been Bigfoot. Those always happen when everyone's kind of sitting around the fire late at night talking and you've kind of forgotten all about Bigfoot and you're just kind of shooting the breeze and whatever. And then suddenly you'll hear limb snap and everyone turns and goes, did you hear that? And those are kind of the moments. And sometimes you'll hear like a, not a scream, but maybe a hoot or a, you know, a grumble or something. So, so you know, again, you know, people that go out intentionally looking for Bigfoot typically don't find them if you're trying to track one, but if you're just kind of in their area and you're minding your own business and, you know, maybe you can draw them in. That's kind of been one of the prevalent methods that I think a lot of researchers use.
I actually think that's funny because the more you explain like what you do, it's very similar to what we do. You know, when we go and investigate ghosts or do a ghost hunt, you would be surprised the amount of evidence that we capture when it's just us sitting around, you know, BSing.
Not looking for ghosts.
Yeah, not looking for ghosts. And then, we run our recorders, and I can remember one time we're sitting around, I'm like, you know, we're at a place where they had possibly had medical patients there. And I'm like, you know, I just wonder if there's any patients here or what's going on. And we're just talking back and forth. And we go back and replay our recorders. And we have a clear voice goes, I'm a patient. And so it's like they were like, hey, wait, look at us. We're here. They're like, why aren't you asking us questions? You know, and they heard us, you know, just having a good time and they wanted to join in. So it's funny how when you describe multiple things tonight about, you know, what you do, it's very similar to what we do. It's just trying to, you know, obviously capture different. We do it inside. And we don't have a ghost call. There is no ghost call.
Yeah. Well, you talk to ghosts though. You know, I've been on some ghost hunts, just tagged along to see what's up, and you know, you try to say, you know, are you here, and say this, and answer this, and you know, you ask them questions. You know, it's kind of a similar type of concept. But you're right. Also, a lot of the toys are the same. You know, you got your audio recorder, and you got your FLIR, and you got your, you know, use a lot of the same toys and gadgets too. So.
So if the ghost hunting thing fails for us, we can always look for Bigfoot.
We got the right plan. You've got the gear.
Yeah.
You've kind of been through the drill in the ghost hunting. You're just out in the woods instead of, you know, in an old house or theater or wherever you'd be.
I have to say, Rob,
it's sounding more and more fun because they cook bacon. Okay?
No, we don't.
I might have to convert.
And it's not even like, I can't even tell you like, well, you know, the elements are going to be hot outside or anything, because we're usually like in abandoned buildings that don't have air or heat. So it's almost like the only thing we are usually protected on is like any kind of like rain or snow. Besides that, it's pretty much the same. Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
We've had it snow inside. She's actually
had a tent set up inside of one of the buildings. So it's kind of, it's super similar. If we did the calls, it would probably make us look like lunatics, but
yeah, you know, you can also do the wood knocking. There's a lot of that's been going on for decades. If you want similar to
and
call,
we do the knock, kind of, you know, we do the
so
we're knocking
the
already.
Thing.
We got this.
Knock on a tree, and if something knocks back, then you know, there aren't any animals out in the woods at night that should be able to knock on a tree except a Bigfoot. You got to have opposable thumbs for that. Pick something up to hit the tree, and also it's got to be a, you know, something heavy. So
yeah, I think we're ready, Rob.
My question for Nicole is, did you say yes, like I'm in a whisper voice?
Damn straight, they cook bacon.
Okay, good, because I you know what's funny, Ken, is like our last couple episodes we've been getting 3 and 4 additional voices through our on our show that aren't us. And we're not sure where it's coming from. It's quite interesting to go back. I have a file from last show where she's talking about she said something where I don't know where they're coming from or who it is. And there's a guy that says, it's us, right through. Mm. And so we're actually capturing paranormal stuff probably right now. So that's why I was curious if she said yes, because if she didn't, then we got to mark it, because we're actually – actively investigating as we're interviewing you. It's insane.
Awesome. Well, multitasking can be a good thing. So.
Except for when you get crazy voices.
We could get Bigfoot.
We could get Bigfoot.
We'll get Bigfoot going, I'm here. We'll be like, oh my gosh.
It was only that easy.
I know. Yeah.
So I guess we're going to kind of go off Bigfoot now, if that's okay with you, because I have other things in mind. So what interests me, and it's a form of cryptozoology, but not really. You know, I guess what I am interested in is animals that are supposedly extinct, but yet there's sightings of. like the thylacine.
Yes,
and
that's
I
mm-hmm.
mine too. I if you tell me you have a book or anything to watch on the thylacine, I'll watch it. I watched it. There was an episode. I don't even know the show. It was maybe 10, 15 years ago. And ever since then, like, I was always interested in that subject and watching it. I'm very curious, not just on a thylacine, but any animal that supposedly is extinct. And then, you know, you have the sightings of, but I guess specifically the thylacine, for whatever reason, just the whole story of that, I think, intrigues me.
Yeah, that's a good one. The Tasmanian tigers, it's also called, kind of a
yes.
carnivorous marsupial that, you know, it's probably one of the most promising cryptids out there because we know they were alive and well up until about 1936, and that's when they were declared extinct. Well, you know, they weren't technically declared extinct until years later, but they were considered extinct. But there have been thousands of sightings, both on the island of Tasmania and even on mainland Australia. So, I mean, the thylacine could still exist, and I think it's likely that it does. After that, you have, of course, this, you know, things like the Loch Ness monster and different sea monsters, sea serpents, if you know, as they're called, which are a lot of people theorize those are prehistoric surviving either marine saurians or ancient whales or, you know, something prehistoric, very huge. You have, you know, allegations of living dinosaurs. You know, sounds improbable, but there are sightings and reports from Africa and New Guinea and elsewhere of, you know, pterodactyls and brontosaurus-type dinosaurs, apatosaurus-type dinosaurs in the Congo. And then, you know, thunderbirds is something I investigate. Native American legends refer to these giant, monstrous birds with 15, 20-foot wingspans. Lots of modern sightings. I've interviewed many witnesses. And, you know, during the Ice Age, 10,000 years ago, you had giant birds with 15, 20-foot wingspans in North America. They were called pterotaurs. So there's a chance some of those might still be around. So, yeah, that's something. It's probably one of the funnest parts of cryptozoology are these theories about these, you know, living fossils, if you will, you know, ancient animals mm-hmm. that might still be around.
Well, isn't,
what about
isn't
the chupacabra?
Oh, yeah, I love the chupacabra.
Chupacabra is kind of like there's a gray area of cryptozoology. It's not really cryptozoology, but it's kind of the fringes uh-huh. of, and I say that because the physical descriptions of the creatures don't fit into the paradigm uh-huh. of zoology, you know what I'm saying? So
right.
their features are just too weird and far out, their behaviors. So there you have creatures like the chupacabra, mothman, dogman, uh-huh. the Jersey devil. I mean, the physical descriptions
yeah.
are impossible, but there are sightings and reports, and they are creatures. So, I mean, some cryptozoologists are interested in those things. I've written a book on Mothman and so on and so forth. So, but the chupacabra is, you know, first thing to keep in mind is that I always tell people that, you know, the name describes a behavior pattern, not a physical description per se.
Mm-hmm.
So the physical description that a lot of people think of came out of Puerto Rico during the mid-1990s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those describe like a 3-foot-tall kangaroo-shaped creature with reptilian features and spikes on its back and giant eyes. Well, that particular description is only from Puerto Rico, and there's kind of kind of dubious. Here in Texas, where I live, I've investigated animals called chupacabras that are different. They're kind of dog-like animals, hairless. But weird long teeth and, you know, other physical deformities and things. So those are called chupacabras, but, you know, we know what there are. They're canids that have a disease or a mutation or something, and they may or may not drink blood. So and there are also winged chupacabras from places like Chile and Mexico and Nicaragua. And so you have all these variations of chupacabras. So it seems to be what I refer to as composite identity. You know, there are a lot of different things going on that are kind of being called the same thing. Hope I didn't burst your bubble there, Nick Emmons.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's just whenever I don't know what something is, I hear something of this, and I'm like, it's a chupacabra. and I might not be too off there because who the hell knows? Why not?
It may or may
right?
not exist in different cultures.
Exactly.
But, definitely, you know, the main thing is that it's a creature that drinks blood. So it's kind of a vampire-like creature, which is, I think, what's fascinating to people and both mm-hmm. very scary, too. But not a lot of evidence compared to something like
right.
Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster or the Thylacine. All of those creatures, there are a lot more sightings and,
mm-hmm.
you know, more signs that they might actually exist.
Right.
Now, you had mentioned the Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe, isn't it the most predominant area where they're seen is like, isn't it the Lake of the Devil? Or isn't it something around that Lake of the Devil with the Thunderbirds?
Where's the Lake of the Devil? Where's that located?
I think in California.
I haven't been there yet.
I've never been either. Sounds great, but I could probably look it up really quick. I'm just going. I think it's in California.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, what I think about the Thunderbirds, and I think, at least from what I've seen and read a little bit, but mostly seen, I'm not a big reading guy. I'll be honest with you, which isn't probably the best thing to tell someone who's pushing a book. The Thunderbird. I believe with the Native Americans, I don't know if the Native, I think the fact that the Native Americans, they passed it down through their ancestors, the stories,
mm-hmm.
and they're
mm-hmm.
still, those stories are still out there right now. And you can go and find, you know, somebody can actually tell you, hey, my ancestors passed this story down. I wonder how much of a factor that plays into, you know, your research is that it's more, do you feel like that's more available because it's in the Native American culture? You can go see like the cave paintings and, you know, other things that you might not be able to do when you, you know, are trying to research something else.
Well, for, you know, in terms of the Thunderbirds, you have many Native American legends similar to Bigfoot that describe giant birds, super eagles, as they're sometimes called. And the name Thunderbird, of course, mm-hmm. is a portrayal of these birds that the beating of their wings sounds like thunder or creates thunder. But, you know, there are many Native American names, Wakanyan, Pahuhukla, and so on and so forth. But as far as modern sightings go, and I've interviewed dozens of credible people that swear they've seen these things, most of the sightings are in Illinois for some reason. Pennsylvania, mostly kind of northern PA. Texas, where I live, has a lot of sightings, particularly in and around San Antonio, where I live, one of the reasons I'm here. Alaska, when I was up there, you know, so there are certain hot spots or active areas, but the sightings are generally all over, or at least in mountainous regions. The descriptions are giant birds with a wingspan at least 10, but more like 12, 15, or 20 feet across, which is way bigger than a condor, for example. Usually a solid dark color, black, charcoal, or dark brown. And this is important, a hooked beak. So that would make it an accipterid, which is essentially a raptor or a bird of prey, like a giant eagle or a condor vulture. So very consistent descriptions. And again, it's kind of similar to the pterotaurs, which were these ice age, these massive ice age vulture type birds that carrion eaters that were around up till 10,000 years ago. So, you know, maybe some of those are still around. That's kind of the theory.
I'm actually taking the time to look up that Lake of the Devil.
I know there's some sightings in California. Lake Elsinore, I think, is a lake out there where I know there have been
sightings. Lake Elizabeth.
Oh, okay. Maybe I have my names wrong. Elizabeth Elsinore, those are similar, aren't they?
I'm just going through Wikipedia, so who knows whatever somebody.
Oh, Wikipedia, it could be anything.
Yeah, it's got to be right? If I read it on the internet, it's got to be true.
Yeah. I got a map on my wall with all the Thunderbird sightings marked, and there's quite a few in California. I mean, there are definitely.
This is Fremont. Fremont, California.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Most of the pterotaur fossils have been found in the La Brea tar pits in California, so that's not too far from there. So,
Well, you know, I think it interests me. I remember watching something on that. I think they said they had portals in the bottom of the lake there that they would use to get around. And to me, I found that to be like, interesting and weird at the same time. So I think that's why that left a mark on my mind. But I guess, you know, if you want to give one more plug to your book, I wanted to let everyone know we're talking to Ken Gearhart, and he's got a new book out. And tell people where can they get it.
Well, thank you. And hey, guys, thanks again for having me on. It was some great questions, good conversation as always. So I had a great time. My new book is called The Essential Guide to Bigfoot. It's on Amazon. And also, if you go to my author page on Amazon, you can see some of my other titles, which are available there. And if any of your listeners are interested in a personalized or autographed copy, they can contact me directly via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or, you know, whatever they choose. And I'm always happy to sign one and send it out as well. The Essential Guide to Bigfoot.
I think that's the way to go. I'd go with the autographed copy.
Yeah.
So everyone hit up Ken right on Facebook and get that. You know, it's been fun having
you.
Yeah,
I got bacon ain't cheap, so I got to sell.
That's
it.
Right. I can attest to that one. That's fact.
Well, we'll try to have you on again, we'll have to make sure 3 or 4 years don't pass.
No, much sooner, for sure. I'd love to come back on, and we can hit up some of the other. We can talk more about the Chupacabra, or if you guys want to talk about whatever, you know. There's always there's a whole host of weird creatures out there that people are curious about. So,
well, I have a whole another list that I want to talk about. So we definitely, but you know, we wanted to make sure to get, you know, the word of your book out, and then kind of just ask questions that people maybe who aren't familiar with what you do kind of, you know, ask those. And it was a good time. So we'll set that up, and we'll talk to you soon.
Fantastic. Yeah. Sounds good.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki.
All right.
Well, you guys have a great night. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
You too. Bye-bye. Right.
Take care. Bye.
Well, that's always fun.
I so want to go on a Bigfoot hunt now.
I
kind of
do,
bacon.
Too. You know what I found interesting?
Well, now
right
that I know bacon's involved, why haven't I done this before? Shit.
You know, this is just an odd thing. You know, I find odd. I come up with odd things all the time. But, you know, what was cool is he actually hung up an actual phone. Did you pick that up, too?
True.
He must.
Oh, my God.
I haven't heard anyone hang up an actual phone in, like, I don't think ever on our show.
Well, I do it at work, and I don't, but not on our show.
That's like
that's
super
amazing.
Old school. That's awesome. I have to, I'm trying to start broadcasting now from an old landline phone.
He was bringing it back. I like it.
It's like Bigfoot style.
Word.
I don't know why that struck me as interesting.
It's so
sold.
I don't know. I'm still hung up on bacon, okay?
He's probably sitting there eating bacon, talking on his landline, just laughing. That's what I would do.
If you were Bigfoot or what?
No, if I had a landline and bacon, I'd just sit there and laugh and eat bacon and talk on my landline.
Yeah.
I have neither right now. So.
Living the dream? Yeah, I don't have any bacon either, and I don't own the landline anymore.
Mm-mm. That darn Ken wants us to, he's throwing a fast one at us tonight. I now want a landline and a bacon. I used to have some great phones, too. I had one that was like a sneaker. I want to find that.
One
probably at my parents'
house. Through.
If this was an actual
sneaker.
Back like,
when I was
sneaker.
Like 12, I had a see-through phone. And it lit up when it rang, and you could see all the parts.
That was pretty cool. I've seen those phones before, but had you ever seen a sneaker phone? Like, it looked like a basketball shoe, but it was a phone. I got it from Sports Illustrated.
It seems like it'd be uncomfortable to talk on, though.
It was stupid. You couldn't even hear from it, but it was a sneaker phone, so it was awesome. So you just had to, like, deal with it.
Oh, see, my see-through one was really cool, and it had a really tangled cord. You know, because I would stretch it further than you should, and then And then when you tried to do it again, you regretted your verse, stretching it out, but you continued to do so. Yeah.
Maybe that's what we need to do is bring those back. That's our official broadcast modes.
I would probably try to move while using it and yank it out of the wall. I mean, we've become so spoiled, you know, with the technology where, you know, I'll even catch myself at work on a corded phone, a corded landline, and I get pissed, really, because I'm like, gosh, I wish I would have called this person just using my personal cell phone, because then I could move.
Well, you know, I'll send you a video. There's a video of Chris Farley, and he takes a headband and puts the headband and wraps and puts a headband on and then sticks the phone through the headband. So it's kind of like hands-free, because I know you don't have hands-free. So then you might be able to, I'll get you a headband so you can wear the headband with the phone.
Yeah, but I can't walk around.
No, but you can still do other stuff with your hands then.
I put the phone on my shoulder, and it's unlike a cell phone. You could still hear me. You know what I mean? Like, because with the cell phone,
I know what you mean. Because it's
you know all about that.
Oh, it's awful. Like, the one thing that's, it's making my chest hurt. I'll move my phone away for like a third of a second, but she's already saying, I can't hear you. So.
Right, because why waste the breath? Why are you going to sit there and say something when I'm just going to have to hear you start at a point that I've already heard all over again, okay? And then you're going to end up moving the phone by the time we get to the part where you moved the phone the last time. That's just annoying. Right. Just like when you tell someone, I'm sorry, you broke up. They go back to a word that you've already heard.
Yeah.
Okay, start at that point, and then you just constantly keep hearing the, and I said, okay, I know you said something. Don't add the, and I know, and I said, just give me the friggin' meat and potatoes. Because if for whatever reason, it'll continue to cut at the same point. And that's just annoying.
And these people get
and
to see what
and
I
said, and nothing. And
people
I said,
get to see what I
nothing.
Deal with.
No, but seriously, okay? It's really friggin' annoying just to hear, and I said, you know.
Do I do that? Are you talking about me specifically or just people in general?
You do it.
I said, but you do it. I don't remember saying I said in front of it. Maybe I do. I don't know.
You always add something that I've already just heard, and it's words that were not needed to be repeated. Hence why when I say, I heard you all the way up to, and I'll say the last word I heard. And then you'll just start back to that other word again.
But what if I need to build the scenario again? So it's like, oh.
You don't need to build a damn thing.
Keep in mind, I spent an hour and 45 minutes making you a new promo because you said you wanted it. So
I got it.
I think you have it easy. You have it easy. You just don't realize.
I deal with you on a daily basis.
It's a good thing.
That's not having it easy, though.
It is.
Oh,
you want a new promo, but you got a new promo, a new intro. Was it a good intro? No. But I tried my hardest, and I even converted a file for the first time in my entire life.
How does it feel to be up to par with everybody else in society who's already done that?
Don't care for it, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to go with the rotary phone on that one. I wish I had an MP2.
Sort of thing.
What's funny is I don't know why you would convert down. I don't know if a 4 to a 3, but it happened.
Oh my gosh, you really don't know the difference.
Sure, one number is bigger than the other. I don't know the difference, I'll be honest with you.
Oh.
One's for audio and video, one's just for audio.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I just guessed because I had to convert for my first time ever. That was just a guess.
MP3 is a lot of music files, audio files, okay?
Right.
Okay. Download the audio on MP3. I mean, it's just typical. Okay, MP4 is audio and video.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you
There's
think
multiple
it's just an
types
audio.
Of audio files, dot waves, okay, et cetera, et cetera. Just like with video, there's MOVs, okay, all sorts of different types of file endings that are types of video files. Yeah. We could have a whole class.
Wish. No, I need a class.
You just wish you never had to convert on. I literally have converters that I've downloaded that I do because I'll convert my video files, my Sony cameras. I convert to MP4s for size and for compatibility purposes. I've been converting files as long as I can remember.
Well, I found a place on the internet that converted it by me just uploading it, and then it was free if I downloaded it within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to send you a link tomorrow of a file converter where you could do all sorts of conversions. It'll blow your mind.
Oh, my God. No, it will blow my mind. I actually got a migraine trying to figure out how to do it. You know, and the thing was, I think the thing that really bothered me was that I felt like I was accomplishing something by making a new intro. Like I said, it wasn't a good intro, but did it do the trick somewhat. Okay, but then
I had
like,
a hard time hearing it. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, it worked. It was loud.
I heard something.
Well, I mean, I can turn it up if you want
and
to hear
it
again. But
the thing that Bob, don't play the old one.
No, I got the new one. It's Live Paranormal Spotlight intro. It was loud. And the first, I don't know if it was loud the second time. I think maybe I had the volume turned down a little bit. But I have a script here, too. Look, let's see if you can even hear it.
Is it written on real paper or is it an envelope?
No, it's an actual sheet of paper. It says, thank you for joining us for live.
Welcome to regular people world.
You're interrupting my hard work on a piece of paper. Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio with your host, LiveParanormal.com owners, Rob Zarek and Nikki Paranormal. Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio starts now. That was the script.
Wow. That's some good work right there.
You know, and I did have Live Paranormal Spotlight Radio powered by LiveParanormal.com broadcasting network starts now. But you know what? I decided to cut that down a little bit because it really. Because
you knew I
wouldn't
like the powered by.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It was like when I said, it was one of those words.
Don't say one of the words.
I have a list of words which I'm not allowed to use.
Because they're annoying.
Just like I have rules, but the number one rule is not
I can
to
tell
say,
when
I have rules.
No good when you use certain words in your responses.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, he's going to be a straight up asshole in his reply to whomever because he used a certain word. And that's either text or verbal. It doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
I can tell. Okay? And then you use that same word with ing on the end today. And it just bothered me because the way you literally use the other word, it bothers me at this point. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure we're talking about the same word, but I'm sure it's
on the
list.
We're talking about the word craft and crafting.
Yes. That's
I
it.
I hate it. You ruined the movie The Craft for me. I can't even go to Michael's because I think of Arthur
Watch
Craft and then I get all disturbed.
Laura Croft.
Killed it. No, that's Croft.
Yeah,
not Croft.
I mean, I started using it. I was crofting. It's a British way to say it.
Mm-mm.
If I was only British, I would say croft.
Mm-hmm. No.
I thought the intro, the verbiage was solid. It's just the trying to figure out how to take, you know, my amazing voiceover work and lay it over audio. Or a free music file and then create it. But anyway, I did all that in that amount of time. And then I was really pumped up. I'm like, all right, I'm going to upload it. And then it said, we do not accept MP4s. And then I was like, mother effer. And I actually said the whole thing. And Yeah.
You meant business.
I did mean business. And then I was like, all right, I got nothing because I didn't want to ask you because then the surprise element wouldn't have been there.
Uh-huh.
So I decided to Google it and it said free tool.
How did it work? How did work to How was it? You Googled by yourself for the first time. How was it?
So I Googled for the first time, and then I've converted a file for the first time. So there's a lot of firsts tonight.
Aw, I didn't like it. Congratulations.
So if I'm not surprising you with something, I'm going to still ask you to help me.
No. No. See, those digital assistants now, you can use your phone and ask. Like, see, my kids have gotten tired because I just go, can't you Google it yourself? Okay? So now they just ask their phone. Maybe you should start using that option.
I like the text and then have you respond. I'm not independent.
You need to be. At this time in your life, it's time to grow that ability to Google or at least ask your phone on your own. My 12-year-old can do it. I've got faith in that.
I actually don't even use Google. I use AOL Search.
That might be part of your problem.
I'm just teasing. I didn't really use AOL Search.
You probably do.
Thought it was humorous.
I don't find it too far-fetched for you. At AOL.com.
I have an AOL.com email address from 1996 or whatever.
That's why I said it.
I actually have the same cell phone number since 1996, so maybe I'm just old school. I'm an old soul who's old school.
I do not have the same phone number since that year.
Uh-huh.
I'm happy to say.
I don't need that.
And like the people who had my number back then, if they need me now, they have my number. If they don't, maybe I don't have anything to say.
Oh, I'm not saying that it's like you're probably 100% accurate. But I've never gotten any calls like, hey, do you remember me? I have never gotten those. So I'm sure maybe like tomorrow I'm going to have it now. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Late tonight. Yeah. Hey.
Go for it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
Anyway, I wouldn't know. I don't have my ringer on anyway.
I think you had to have a ringer on because I called you and like, hey, are you doing a show tonight? And you're like, I was, you know, going to, but you had to have answered it. That rang.
Yeah, no. I don't know if I did or not. But look.
That would have been a good time.
Sometimes
that would have been amazing.
It's just a sixth sense. It could be my watch going off, too.
Well, I think the bottom line from our conversation is that we are still needing an intro.
Word.
So we're going to work on that. We'll have a new intro for next week. hopefully I'll... I don't think mine is that bad, but it's not quality. It's just a new intro. It's something different. So I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes. I did.
All right. Well, I guess we're coming back next Tuesday with a surprise guest.
Yeah.
I already know the guest. I sent you the guest via text message today, and then I forgot to ask you if you looked at it and if you knew who it was. So you have to let me know post-show if you know who that person is, and we're cool with that guest. So,
okay.
I will see everyone next week, and I will talk to Nicole hopefully soon, and we'll get that guest situated for everyone and get that posted. Because we have some big people coming out, supposedly. And,
yeah.
Some that are going to shock people.
Excited. About
literally.
That. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So I hope everyone had a fun evening and hopefully they're still listening. I would assume they probably dropped everything and they're out looking for Bigfoot right now. So we're probably talking to nobody because everyone's
bacon.
Like, yes. And look, trying to find their old rotary phones because.
That's right.
I think I might do that.
Bringing it back old school.
I try to.
It's one way to do things, you know. It's like you could just be, you know, totally out there and, yeah, why not?
Well, you know, just one last thing about, you know, being old school and doing things my own way. There's so many different audio and video files I have of you calling me a dork or names like that because I do keep it real and go with the old school stuff.
I always speak the truth.
Sometimes the truth hurts, but anyway, see everyone next week, Tuesday
Bye,
night, 10:30 for a live Paranormal Spotlight Radio. Ends now. That's the outro. We need an outro.
Oh my God, yeah.
And now.
The list gets longer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, good night.
All right, good working on that one.
And
have
now.
A good night. Bye, everybody.